I'm here with Dave Skirica of AddictedToProfits.net. We're going to talk about the gold stocks today and maybe a few other markets. Dave, the gold stocks have been, they had a pretty nasty Monday and Tuesday to start the week, but in today they sold off to begin the day. We had a pretty nice reversal. It looks like the GDX bounced off the 200-day moving average. And this is happening as silver has basically been, you know, retracing that parabolic move, and gold's been a little bit weak. So what are your thoughts?
Well, in terms of silver, if you know, it was when you have a parabolic move like that, it's always difficult to tell, you know, where and when it's going to end. So, you know, you can't sit there and pound your chest and say, we told you so. But I turned a little bearish a little before me, but I did start getting more muted on silver this past, and actually I sold, you know, more that than getting bearish. I just sold and took profits in some of my silver positions, which was actually a good move because a lot of them, the silver stocks have kind of led been even worse than silver here. And if you look at the 2004 and 2006 spikes, you'll see the price action is quite similar in that you get about a double in the 6 to 9 months preceding the top, and then you get a very quick reversal, which usually leads to a very short, sharp decline, usually about a month in duration, takes roughly 30 to 40% off the price of silver itself, and then you get a slow base building, and sometimes it can actually take another year or two to break out that above that previous high. Like in 04, it didn't break it to 06, and then in 06, it didn't break it to late 07, early 08. So that is essentially what I would look for here. We probably will see a short-term bounce sometime soon, followed by a secondary wave lower, which will probably be the final wave. And again, if I'm looking at roughly 35-30%, I think $33 to $35 an ounce would be what I would be looking for. But of course, because you have all this commentary, silver's a bubble, oh, it's down 20% from its highs, what people don't realize is, in the long term, like who really cares if silver is 30 or 40 or 50? Because if you're investing in a lot of the smaller cap silver companies or exploration companies, they can make a huge amount of money with silver at those prices. So I'm not actually worried about it. Obviously, the silver positions I still own, you know, they might decline a little bit here if we do see another $5 to $10 drop. But, you know, at these levels, you know, you can make a lot of money. And then as it pertains to the gold market, I think actually silver is dragging gold lower. Gold actually looks a lot better to me here. And I wouldn't even be surprised if on the silver balance, gold made a new high. But I just think you're just seeing silver kind of drag the precious metals complex lower.
Yeah, just one more thought on silver before we get to gold. A lot of those stocks, you know, they went up. They didn't just double. I mean, there were stocks that tripled, quadrupled, quintupled. So, you know, in this type of correction where we get a serious correction, I mean, these juniors are going to go down 40%, maybe some of them 50%. So I think people have to understand that. And also, you know, you could disagree with me, but we're going to see some good rebounds because these things have come down so much, but you're going to have to wait a couple months. You know, the summer's coming up. I would say let these things settle. You know, wait for sentiment to hit that bearish point, because it will at some point. And, you know, that's the time when you want to go back in.
Yeah, it's kind of like what happened with gold and silver last summer, too. It peaked at roughly this time of year, May, June. We saw that decline into July, and a lot of negative sentiment then started to pop up in July and August. And yeah, that's the same thing I would look for. And actually, again, if you look at the history of silver, after that first decline lower, it tends to be, or the second, you know, the first move, like that month-long move I talked about, that tends to be the low. But then, yeah, there's a number of months of kind of basing and only slightly upwards bias in it after that to kind of build that base. So, yeah, I wouldn't see like that you have to run out and go buy these things overnight. And I think you got a nice, like you just said, into the summer, a nice three-month window here coming up to kind of average in and on these things. And I guess if I'll move it on to gold here. You talked about how, you know, I think we were both right or both wrong. I was looking for a breakout in gold, and you were looking for more of a trading range. And we kind of got both in that gold price did break out a bit, but the stocks just kind of went to the higher end of their range. And to me, it looks more like, again, and this is kind of what happened again last spring as well, that were just going to be range bound in the gold stocks, you know, between, I don't know, roughly, 500 to 600 on the Huey, and we'll probably break out again later in the year. And I think if we set up for a stock market top and the next bear market sees higher interest rates, higher commodity prices, lower dollar, and other assets kind of come off, that is when you can, between gold and the stock market, and you can see the gold stocks outperform. Because one reason money's not moving into the gold stocks, and I know you've said this as well, is because the market's holding up really well, so there's other assets for people to put money into. But when gold, silver, and other commodities become the only game in town, and I really think they will, we'll have a stagflationary kind of environment, I think that will really, really help the stocks. Now, like the one thing I have to say I find frustrating, and I don't want to piss off our American listeners, but a lot of Americans are really, really dense when it comes to the precious metals, and they just don't get it. And I keep wondering, when is the average retail investor going to kind of wake up and realize that they have to have precious metals as a part of their portfolio? And, you know, because I being in the Bahamas, I get to meet a lot of tourists and a lot of people down here on vacation, a lot of affluent people. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard the quote, "I'm thinking about buying gold and silver." And I'm looking at them like, you know, we've had a sixfold increase from the bottom. Your currency is declining every single day. You're printing money like crazy. The deficit's $1.6 trillion. The financial system blew up. Like, what does it take for you to buy a little bit of gold?
Yeah, I just think people, you know, your average, they may get their advice from their average financial advisor, and they just, they're so set on the 1980 thing, like, oh, you know, these things could just crash at any moment. So it's really, it's just really a lack of knowledge of the fundamentals and what's going on. I mean, I remember at the beginning of the year where, I think it was the former economist for Merrill Lynch, I won't say his name, but he said, like, he had a quote, like, "We're looking to more fundamentally based assets this year, like stocks, you know, because gold has basically, it's just run on hype and momentum." I mean, are you effing kidding me, buddy? I mean, we're like 11 years into a bull market here, and anybody who's paying attention could just rattle off what's driving this bull market in precious metals. And, you know, Dave, I just think that, you know, the fact that, I know I want to stay away from the hype, but, we are 11 years into this bull market, and at some point, I don't know, maybe it's going to be 3 months, maybe it's going to be 15 months, or maybe it's going to take 2 years, 1 year, I don't know. But at some point, this thing is really going to start to pick up. And I think it's, and let's just kind of talk catalyst, because I think I'm a little slightly more concerned than you in the near term. Like, I really feel like the sector needs some kind of a catalyst, especially when I think the idea is that, okay, well, the economy's doing okay. The stock market's doing well. You know, we've averted some problems. I really feel like the gold stocks kind of need a catalyst, and that at some point there's going to be a big catalyst coming that is really going to start to gradually push people into this sector, you know, as the stock market and as bonds kind of struggle.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. There has to be some kind of switch or turning point. Like in the 70s, the turning point, remember, gold stocks were actually going up since the early 60s. I think the turning point was kind of the, you know, the first oil embargo and the bear market of 73, 74. And that kind of really shifted people into gold and precious metals. And you saw guys like, you know, Harry Brown in his book, Profit from the Coming Devaluation. Like those books became like bestsellers, and you really saw a push into it. Like, you know, one maybe contrary indicator to argue is my book has sold pretty well. But, you know, I'm not on every single TV channel yet. And maybe when I am is the sign when you're going to top out, unfortunately.
When you become the Dennis Gartman.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I think he cursed the gold market because he turned bullish last week. I should have. Anyhow, I won't get into that. By the way, he turned bullish on euros, remember? And that was the top of gold and euros. So this guy, I don't see how you can be a worse trader than him. No offense, Dennis.
All right, here's a little, maybe you could pull up a chart of gold while I'm talking, because I want to talk about the technicals on gold. You know, even though the gold stocks didn't really sustain their breakout, gold had a nice breakout, moving from about 1425 to 1575. But, you know, you look at the chart, there's going to be strong support from about 1425 to 1450.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
even if we kind of go through a period of weakness, I don't think gold can go down that much. And I think it's rather textbook I mean, the chart is telling you where you're going to have to buy, right around that 1450 level or a little bit lower. At least that's what I'm looking at. And so, I mean, that kind of gives me comfort because, as long as, I think gold's going to kind of slowly go down to that point, and then it'll probably hold it at some point in the summer, and then it's going to be ready to move up again, in the seasonally strong period. And hear your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I wouldn't even, again, be surprised if it's, again, similar to the May to August period last year, where gold had an initial decline in May, followed that with actually a new high in June, and then kind of went back to the May lows again in July. Basically, it was in a range from about 1150 to 1250, roughly, and then broke out. So I wouldn't be surprised if this time the range is 1450 to roughly 1550, and then we kind of slosh around.
And Dave, a lot of people are worried about the large cap gold stocks, and I mean there are a lot of larger stocks and some medium sized ones, but that haven't moved in a while. But you really have to look in the chart and see that these things haven't moved for a long time. I mean, if you look at GDX, it's at 58 right now. That was at 50. I'm looking. It was at 54 last May. So it's all. I mean, it hasn't even gone up that much in the last year. I mean, that's just an index. And that just kind of says to me, if the overall market's going to have some weakness, if gold's going to go down, a lot of money hasn't been moving into these names. They haven't really participated in this move, so people shouldn't be that concerned about them. Do you agree with that?
Oh yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Like, again, if you look at the valuations a lot of these stocks, which traditionally trade at 25, 30, 35, maybe even 40 times earnings, they're actually about roughly half of those valuations right now. So my opinion is a lot of them are so cheap that, yeah, even if gold were to fall a couple hundred dollars from here, I don't know how much they would fall at that time. And then, one of the key ratios I look at when looking at these gold stocks is quite simply just the HUI or XAU to gold ratio. And the HUI to gold ratio actually on May the 3rd hit the lowest level since this last June. So it just means that the gold stocks, like you said, haven't participated. And I think what they really need, and this goes back to what we talked about earlier, was they really need the average investor to be in the market a little more. They're smaller stocks. They need retail orientation. If, for example, the average investor gets in, they'll be demanding that their mutual fund managers get in. And even if, like, the average typical, mutual fund manager in the United States were to put 1 to 2% of his assets in gold, that could really put a bid under these stocks. But people just want to be like blind mice and run around right now until and don't want to accept that. But until that happens, I see them lagging. But when that happens, that's the thing right now. When that happens, they'll go up like gangbusters. So you have to kind of be positioned for that.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're talking about how a catalyst needs to come in, and then after that catalyst, I mean, just the fact, I mean, if you look at the volume in GLD or the volume in GDX, just go back and look at the volume over the past couple of years. The big money has not really been coming into gold and silver that much, specifically the stocks. I mean, yeah, some money has gone into GLD and SLV, and there's some hedge funds taking physical delivery. But I mean, if you look at the stocks that have moved, it's really been like the mid tiers and some of the higher quality juniors. Those are the stocks that have moved, and so that's the sign that hey, the we haven't even begun to really, there isn't even a bubble brewing at the surface. I mean, the move that'll kind of lead into a bubble that hasn't even begun yet. How will we know when that's begun? I think when you look at the volume on GDX and some of these large caps, you're going to see it, clearly. I don't want to say explode, but you're going to see it clearly rise, steadily for, a couple quarters, and I think that's going to kind of be a signal. And as I said before, that time is still ahead of us. We're in a bull market. It's going to have to accelerate and then go parabolic at some point. And I mean, if you look at the S&P, it's pretty close to its long-term resistance. I mean, my target was 1450 in May at the beginning of the year. I'm not patting myself on the back, but you and I, we've looked at a lot of historical things. And a lot of those things have said the market's going to kind of top here in the first half of the year, and that there would be a pretty good rally. There's some good upside left, but looking at it now, how much more upside is left? And eventually, I think as the stock market tops, and the focus is going to kind of go on the budget deficit and then inflation, that could lead to a catalyst for precious metals.
No, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think the real you know, time, I think when you'll see the stock market run into problems is, number one, I don't see us breaking the 2008 lows in the dollar index yet, but we'll probably do that late this year, early next year. And by 2013, we'll be getting to the Greek levels in U.S. debt. If, you know, if say the deficit doesn't go below $1 trillion the next 2 years, meaning that we'll get to those 130% and 140% of GDP. And even with the Fed buying its own bonds, even with the U.S. being the reserve currency of the world, I think that's the level where you're really in dire straits, and you really can't escape the wrath of the market at that point. So that's essentially what I would look at happening, and I think that's when you could really, really see these gold equities move. Yeah, and just so you know, I was around. I started out in the markets in the mid '90s when there was a junior mining bubble, you know, with around Briex and some other, and Diamond Fields and some other big finds. And I remember many junior stocks trading at $5, $10, $15. And I don't mean junior producers; I mean exploration, earlier stage companies. And again, we don't see any sign of that right now. When you start seeing these little exploration companies, say, list in New York instead of list on Vancouver, that I think is your top. So we're nowhere even close to that. And just actually to finish off the cycle point, I've always said we're right now where we were in stocks in the early 90s, where people, you know, we're about 10 years into the bull market. People are now accepting the fact there is a bull market. And you're just kind of setting up a prelude to the bubble phase. So I would not be surprised for the next year or two to see these kind of, you know, tepid gains. And then sometime in about 2012, 13, 14, somewhere in the mid-2010s, you see the turn into the bubble and the more parabolic increases starting in gold.
Okay, final question or final thought here, Dave. You know, the 2012 election, you know, that is, I don't know, maybe about 18 months away. I mean, you know, I think some economic indicators are starting to soften a little bit. So, you know, we could kind of see maybe by the time we get to the winter, you know, the concern might be growth again, you know, especially if we kind of see a correction or a long consolidation in these markets and, you know, unemployment doesn't get that much better. And, you know, it looks like the economy's stagnating again. I mean, at that point, you know, we got Obama and these other politicians. They're going to want to keep pumping money in. Are they going to be talking austerity at that point, you know, a couple quarters before the election? I don't think they're going to be talking about austerity at that point. They're going to want to, you know, have those GDP numbers look good and you know, try and get more people employed. And I mean, that has to be bullish for precious metals at some point.
No, I agree with you, and I agree with the fiscal situation. I don't see, you know, most economists were really critical of both the Democrat and Republican plans, saying they're not realistic, both of them. So, you know, that tells you, number one, there isn't a real serious move towards austerity anyhow. And then, as you said, I don't see a really push until the second term, if Obama gets a second term. And I think one thing you got to take into account is even if the economy is still soft, is the economy wasn't still that great in 2004 when Bush got reelected. It's who's running against him, and I think that could be a real problem for the Republicans or people who want Obama out, because you know there's not a really good candidate going in against him. So I think actually if you're a coal investor, this is a little different than the actual direction of the country. Obama getting reelected is about the best thing you can imagine, because you know, it's going to be, it would basically be a long time before we get some kind of austerity then.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're kind of going over time here, but I don't really see that coming in, probably, assuming he gets reelected, probably until 2013. I mean, maybe at that point, I think inflation is going to be a real huge problem.
I don't think it's going to happen under him, because I lived in Canada in, you know, the 80s. That's when I grew up. And we had a guy named Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Obama reminds me a lot about, very charismatic, kind of younger leader. And Trudeau was very far left, actually borderline socialist. And we were in a big debt crisis. The last year he was in power, or the Liberals were in power, it was about 83, 84. The debt to GDP, I think that was the record high for Canada, about 7 to 8%. And so I actually think Obama is going to be that type of leader. And I actually don't think until 2016 – when I think that's when you'll get the rise up of a really serious austerity-driven presidential candidate, probably as an independent or a Republican. I think that is when you'll finally see the real push towards austerity.
Yeah, and I mean, by that point, some the economy itself, I don't want to say it's, well, it won't look like it's going to be in better shape, but at that point we're going to be, further into the deleveraging and that type of thing. And but just going back to the short term now, everybody wants to cut spending and do austerity, but I mean, if who, the people who are in power, they can't do that because that's what's supporting the economy and keeping it out of basically a depression. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I don't think it's real growth, but yeah, I agree. What keeps the economic statistics from showing, quarter after quarter of negative growth is exactly that. Like you look at Japan in the past 15 years, Japan's private debt to GDP has gone from 270% to 110%. So they've more than cut half their debt. But of course, their public debt to GDP has gone from about 50, 60% to 170%. So that, again, that kind of kept the Japanese economy from falling off a cliff. But again, I guess you could also argue, and I actually tend to be a little more of an Austrian in this degree, that if you kind of let everything just fall apart for a year or two, you would then be able to rebuild it a lot faster instead of just, keeping the patient on life support for 15 years, and I think that's really what they're doing. So, okay, it's keeping it afloat, but I actually don't think it's that positive of a thing. I think you'd actually be better off if the entire thing had a year or two of real substantial weakness. And one thing you got to remember about austerity that people tend to underestimate, if you're doing austerity and you're cutting back your debt levels and this and that, that does lead to some confidence rebuilding in the private sector. And private sector can't expand its spending under that. Like that's kind of what happened in Canada. And granted, that was during the U.S. boom of the 80s and 90s. But Canada kind of went under austerity measures. You saw a pretty big expansion of the private sector because people felt more comfortable investing in the country and that sort of thing again.
Okay, on that note, well, Dave Skirica of Addicted to Profits, thanks so much for your time today.
No problem. Thank you.